Next up is Dave Bittner's conversation with Trevor Hillegas, the Director of Security Research at SpyCloud, our show's sponsor.
So today we are talking about info stealers. Can you give us a little bit of the background and, the lay of the land and history of what brought us to where we are today when it comes to info stealers?
Oh boy, how much time do you have? There's been a lot. Yeah. So info stealers as a type of malware are not new. They've been around for, I think we're coming on a decade-ish. Depends on, you know, what you count as, I guess, patient zero. You know, info stealers, I like to joke, folks in security, I'll speak for myself, unimaginative in our naming conventions. So, you know, info stealers are pretty descriptive. But we're basically talking about a type of malware whose entire purpose of existing is to steal information from an infected host, right? So generally speaking, and this has changed depending on when you look at it in time, generally speaking, non-persistent malware. So, you know, stealthy, delivered to a host, executed, performs its, you know, stealing functions, which vary from malware to malware, and then exfiltrates that data off to a place that the attacker can access it and use it for a variety of purposes. Typically, we're talking fraud, some kind of monetization, but really it runs the gambit. Everything from ransomware to, you know, espionage type stuff to just good old data theft post on carding sites. So yeah, it's a broad spectrum of nasty stuff.
Can we go through the info stealer life cycle? I mean, how does one typically find oneself falling victim to this, and what's the process by which it does its business?
You know, generally speaking, if we're talking about attack vectors, what we see, and just to kind of clarify, when I talk about, you know, observation, stuff like that, my insight into this comes mainly from the post-exfiltration. So we're looking at the data that's actually stolen by these info stealers, not necessarily looking at, you know, doing reverse engineering of any binaries, although we have done that. I often find that it's more interesting, or it can be more interesting, to look at the proceeds of this type of malware, especially for questions about, you know, what the intent is. But the general attack delivery, at least the most successful, tends to be some kind of ruse. So we've seen everything from using some kind of like AdSense. Maybe they're going to post like an ad on Google describing something as a popular messaging app, say like Signal or Telegram, or you pick your app. And that directs you to a website that's carefully crafted to look like or be believable enough to be the real thing. But in fact, what you get is Redline or Raccoon or another info stealer. That tends to be common. It also tends to be fairly short-lived, right? Google's pretty good at catching those things. But if you think about it, the amount of eyeballs on the internet these days, it doesn't, you know, an ad doesn't have to be live for too long for it to get quite a few clicks. Similarly, we also see, and this is, I guess, kind of a recent change, at least the past couple of years, we've seen this spike up, but using things like compromised YouTube channels. So, you know, hackers will essentially take over someone's popular YouTube channel and then use that and its built-in fan base to spread an info stealer quite broadly. But one of the biggest, you know, links between all of these, quite honestly, is the use of social media and, you know, socially relevant things. So games, cracked software, all of that stuff tends to be, you know, kind of the dealer's choice of these malware operators that are running these schemes.
And how do you assess the technical sophistication of these packages? Are we talking about sophisticated things, or is this the entry level for folks who are out there developing malware?
So that's actually a really good question, Dave. One of the really interesting things about info stealers is a lot of these operate as what we call malware as a service. So how I like to describe this is, you know, we're all kind of familiar with sort of like managed software, right? So think about like, you know, Adobe Photoshop. You subscribe to a monthly subscription, maybe it's a yearly subscription. It gets you access to the software. You get support that comes with it. So if something goes wrong, you can contact Adobe. They'll help you out. You know, there's other things that are sort of packaged up in that one subscription deal. The analogy is basically the same for info stealers, malware as a service info stealers. These criminals, developers will create this malware. They will, you know, publish it on criminal forums online, and then market that to other criminals who typically pay either weekly or monthly subscription fees. And those can range anywhere from, you know, $50 up to 200. I think the highest I've seen was like 250 paid in crypto, obviously. But then, you know, that allows that user who might not be very sophisticated, maybe they couldn't have created that malware on their own, but because they were able to pay that money to the person that did create it, now they're able to have this malware that they can deploy. And then they can, you know, reap the proceeds from it. So it's almost like a distributed method of criminality. It doesn't, when we talk about sophistication, typically we're talking about like nation state actors, and those are like the very sophisticated. But what's kind of crazy about the info stealers and the malware as a service model is it almost democratizes the sophistication, right? You don't necessarily need to be some kind of like elite hacker with all of these coding experience to be able to do a lot of damage, because you can take something that was built by somebody else who does have those, you know, that experience and those skills, and then craft your own relatively low sophistication ruse and still be able to victimize, you know, a massive amount of people.
Help me understand what the specific concern here is for the corporate cybersecurity professional. I mean, are info stealers targeting individuals and the corporation gets infiltrated as a side effect, or are they targeting companies as well?
Yeah, so I don't know who said this quote originally, so I'm probably going to steal it from somebody, but there's this mechanics quote. It goes something like, 90% of the problems in a car are between the driver's seat and the steering wheel, right? I think you could apply that very easily to IT. In terms of like, you know, do these info stealers target companies? I'm not going to say no. I'm sure there, you know, there are criminals out there that are definitely targeting specific companies, but oftentimes it really seems like more of a spray and pray methodology, right? We're going to infect the maximum number of victims that we possibly can. And then in sorting through, you know, the proceeds of those infections, we'll find a gem. And that gem might be, if you're an initial access broker, maybe it's, you know, some Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 company that you're going to be able to sell that access to a ransomware affiliate that can then, you know, infect that company or exfiltrate data and charge a ransom. It could be, you know, on the lower level, somebody that's interested in carding or identity theft, right? All they're looking for is things that they can sell to other criminals or even use themselves. It could be even more simple than that. So the real big danger really in all of that is corporations are made up of individuals, right? So even if something isn't necessarily targeting you as a corporation by name, you know, your employees being human beings and being online people are still part of that targeting pool. So if you have a situation where you have maybe unmanaged or undermanaged, or you have like bring your own device policies, basically anything that, you know, allows access to your environment that's not necessarily tightly controlled or monitored, you're kind of increasing your vulnerabilities to this kind of malware, because those employees that are doing things maybe on their personal device could leak information that does connect back to your corporate infrastructure, and then in turn could turn into a significant event.
What are your recommendations then? I mean, for folks to best protect themselves against this, what sort of things should they be focused on?
Yeah, so we just released a report that in part surveys a bunch of security professionals asking a lot of questions about how they, you know, see info stealers, whether they're worried about them, what their security controls consist of. Alongside that, my team, my research team did some our own research on the data, and we looked at what do we see in these logs, and kind of what context can we provide to the greater survey. And one of the things that was really interesting from that was we found greater than 1/5 of all of the info stealer logs. So these are logs, folders, you can think of them like folders containing a bunch of files that were stolen from a device. 1/5, so 20% of those logs had an installed antivirus appliance at the time of execution. So the easy thing would be to say, you know, make sure your security controls are very good. Make sure you have good antivirus. Make sure it's well updated. Make sure you have visibility of your networks. You know, you decrease bring your own device policies. You monitor things like MFA, and you have good, you know, cookie revocation policies, all of those things that are great policies in general. None of that is infallible, right? And I'm not saying don't do that stuff. Like, definitely
right.
Do all of that, please.
Yeah.
But, you know, as a security practitioner, it's really good to do all of those things and still have a backup plan. And I would say that backup plan really is visibility. And it's visibility beyond what we traditionally consider part of the, you know, sort of digital forensics incident response process. So we're hyper-focused on devices. We're really focused on networks and things like firewall logs and application logs and all these kinds of things. But with InfoStealers especially, we have this sort of wild card variable at play that is everything that was taken from that device that we might not have a record of. You know, if you ask me like, hey, give me a list of all of the accounts that you have, I mean, I could probably construct like an 80% list, but I don't know all the accounts that I have, right?
Right.
Maybe that's just me. Maybe somebody else has a much better awareness of their online
environment. No, I don't think it's just you.
I think it's hard.
I think we all suffer from that. All those legacy accounts that just, I sometimes call them zombie accounts, you know, because they just hang around and they refuse to die.
That's good. Zombie account. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right. We're so deeply invested in the internet that, you know, our online identity really has become our identity. You know, IRL has become just RL. Right. And I think, you know, that kind of situation, it becomes very difficult. So, you know, having that understanding, approaching an incident with, I'm going to look at this device. Obviously, I'm going to do a good incident response, forensic-centric incident response, but also what else could have been stolen? What types of, you know, session tokens could have been stolen? What are the validity periods of those? What kind of, you know, maybe there's API tokens, if we're talking about like a developer or somebody that has access to that kind of, you know, internal systems. What other information could be on their intellectual property? A lot of stealers will actually steal files, you know, full fat files from a desktop or, you know, documents folder. So what was in those files? Is that intellectual property? Is it something that might be export controlled, right? There's all these other questions that we start asking. And just having the knowledge and the foresight to ask those questions, I think is really half the battle.
I know you and your colleagues there at SpyCloud, you have this notion of a post-infection remediation. I mean, is that really what we're getting at here?
Yeah, basically. So, you know, post-infection remediation, again, with the names, you know, we're pretty simple people. I think it's pretty pretty descriptive. Got to break it down for people like me that used to work for the government. But it's basically that. Do all the great incident response things that, you know, we've all learned from SANS or whoever else. We've gone to all these classes and learned these things. Do those, but also, you know, consider outside of the device, especially as we start, or not even start, right? This is well on its way. Like we're very cloud focused now. We've got all these different appliances, with third-party appliances, security appliances that are out there, SSOs. You know, our environment is no longer just a computer or even just a network, right? It's our corporate environment is much larger now. So consider those things and understand things like, if I have a cookie, an authentication cookie, and it's valid, and I also have some basic device information like your screen size and your OS type, some of that stuff, I can become you, right? It's not hard. There's open source tools out there that allow me to essentially emulate your device and pass that cookie as if I was just hitting F12 and refreshing the page. And so in that kind of a situation, you can have the best multi-factor authentication in the world. If I can do that, and maybe I can exit from, you know, I get a residential proxy in one of your neighbors down the street, or even you specifically, right? Your own router, I can look basically identical. And so it's very difficult to control for that. So PIR is basically, let's summarize all of that, bring ourselves, you know, expand your consciousness. It's like that, you know, big brain meme, right? Expand your consciousness beyond just this device and think about all the other pieces of information that we create either intentionally or unintentionally and are still out there in the environment that we need to control for.
As you're out and about, you know, working with folks on this problem, to what degree are they self-aware? I mean, are people accurate and up to date on the reality of their vulnerability to this? Or are people whistling past the graveyard?
I like that, whistling past the graveyard. I think in security, I'll speak for myself, I have a tendency to be overly pessimistic. We have an amazing amount of experience and knowledge, and you know, there is a lot of awareness. Now, is that enough? I don't know the answer to that question necessarily. I think, you know, going back to the survey that we did, we had a lot of respondents say that they were concerned about this and that they're at least cognizant. I think one of the statistics was like 98%, I want to say, they would want better visibility into at-risk appliances. So that tells me that people are at least aware of what they don't know, you know, knowledgeable that they need to close that gap as much as possible. But when you get into the specifics, especially about InfoStealer malware, because it is very niche, right? This is something that not everybody has dedicated their life to this, like I have. I don't recommend that. In fact, you should have a hobby. But, you know, something that, you know, specific, it's that is much more niche. And so that's why I see like what I like doing is what you're offering me today, a platform to come on and talk about this, because I'm not saying, you know, you're going to listen to this podcast and become an expert on InfoStealers. But hopefully some of the things that I've said have hit a nerve. And maybe if you were part of that 98% that said, yeah, we want to know more, maybe one of these things that I said has kind of keyed into that and given you a question to ask or something to a bit of information to go after. So that's kind of what I would say in terms of like general knowledge and how do we spread the message. I think it's just kind of being repetitive and saying the same things and highlighting what I see and some of my peers see as significant vulnerabilities and things that are precursors, things like ransomware, and then raising the visibility kind of writ large.